the word of Jehovah that came through Micah, in brackets, Micah equals or means who is like God, end bracket, Micah of Moresheth Gath, in brackets, Moresheth Gath means, quote, possession of a wine press, end quote, end bracket. Micah of Moresheth Gath that he visioned at Samaria, in brackets, Samaria means watch mountain, end bracket, and Jerusalem, in brackets, Jerusalem, city of dual peace, end bracket, in the days of Jotham, in brackets, Jotham means Jehovah is perfect, end bracket, Ahaz, in brackets, Ahaz means he is grasped, end bracket, Hezekiah, in brackets, Hezekiah means Jehovah is my strength, end bracket, kings of Judah, Judah means celebrated. The word of Jehovah that came through Micah of Moresheth Gath, that he visioned at Samaria and Jerusalem in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, kings of Judah. That's the Ward Green translation of Micah, chapter 1, verse 1, from 2003. That's our daily scripture for today. And I just noticed something interesting. If you look at the names of the kings of the southern kingdom of Judah, after it split into the kingdoms of the north, which was Samaria, and the kingdom of Judah to the south, the kings of Judah always have the name like Hezekiah, which means Jehovah is my strength. Jehovah's name is in the king's name. Jotham means Jehovah is perfect. But Ahaz, the king of the northern kingdom of Israel, his name means he is grasped. And I looked up the name of the king who was known as Jeroboam, who was the first king of the northern kingdom, to find out what his name meant. And I'm trying to, oh, here, wait a minute. I'm trying to find it. Yeah, there it is. The name, it's spelled differently, but Jeroboam from Wikipedia. The article called Jeroboam is commonly held to have been derived from two words in Hebrew signifying the people contend or he pleads the people's cause, and is alternatively translated to mean his people are many or he increases the people. See, the name of Jehovah doesn't actually come into the name Jeroboam. There's a wonderful painting of Jeroboam by Fragonard, 1752. Isn't that wonderfully colored? It's a beautiful painting. Yeah, I love that. I love that painting. It's entitled Jeroboam Sacrificing to Idols. See, the northern kings had abandoned the worship of Jehovah. And now coming to our article for today's study, the paragraph is in the article, The Ark of Urartu to the Orient Express, and we're on the last chapter, chapter 12, of, this is part 2 now, of the article, part 2 having begun with chapter 7, and we've read all of it except for chapter 12, paragraphs 2 through 12, and this is paragraph 2, chapter 12. Ararat, or Urartu, is formed from three consonants, R, R, T. The other letters are vowels, right? And it was on the mountains of Ararat that the ark rested. Very important distinction here. By resting, one may not mean landing, but that the anchor stones, hanging below the ark somewhat, found land. They were very heavy anchor stones that the ark had that were found after the ark landing that are shown on the map we looked at yesterday. Many of them, 12 of them, were found at near the town of Kazan. And I learned that Kazan is right here on this map, and that the other town, Arzap, is actually the old name for this other town, Sagliksuyu. It's a very small village, but because it's the nearest village to this place, Kazan, it was given as the, and it's also a town which used to be called Arzap. So Arzap was given as the alternate name for the location here of Kazan, which is northwest of Dogubeyazit. I've got to look up the pronunciation of that sometime. But that is also northwest of Uzengili. And I showed the distance here. This is a map, right? If you look on this map here, what happened? Here we go. It says it's the distance between, on this map, yeah, 14 minutes or 8.1 kilometers between Arzap and Kazan on this map. But where did I look it up? I saw it recently. It's here somewhere. No, wait a minute. The distance between... It's in the reading today. We're going to find out the distance between some of these cities, such as Dogubeyazit and Uzengili. It says, or at least the distance between Kazan and Uzengili is 18.58 miles, or about 30 kilometers from, that is Kazan to Uzengili. And that's the distance that we were trying to estimate yesterday. But by resting, the ark didn't come to rest in the sense that it landed on top of the land. The boat was still floating, but the anchor stones were resting on the ground under the water. That's what coming to rest means, okay? This is as the tops of the mountains were not yet visible during and after the deluge had ended. There was still a lot of water. The tops of the mountains were not yet visible. And in the Tara lingo, which means the sailors talk, the language of sailors, in their language, the ship is quote unquote at rest when not quote unquote underway. So therefore it's at rest when it stops moving in the water, right? That's what that says. Mr. David Deal noted that the village of Kazan, which we're calling Arzap, as the old name for another village nearby, because there's no other village near to the place of Kazan, I suppose. It's very strange why we thought perhaps there was no other ancient village at the site near Kazan, that therefore it was called Arzap here as the ancient name of Kazan. And Kazan's a modern name for a modern town. And that village, Kazan, has to this day 12 very massive stone objects of the necessary size and characteristics consistent with ark anchor stones. They're just huge. These stones, they're just gigantic. Lying northwest, 18.58 miles from Uzengili, about 30 kilometers, there being two more such anchor stones near Uzengili. after the ark first descended at Uzengili, and this after some 2 months or more of resting at anchor, the first thing one might imagine that the survivors did, they were Noah and his three sons and their wives, was to go to find the anchor stones that they had cut at Kazan, that they had cut away at Kazan. Right? They went further forward and towards Uzengili after cutting away the anchor stones at Kazan, and then they cut away two more anchor stones nearby to the landing site, and then they landed near Uzengili, and the place where the ark, quote, clung to the earth, end quote, by way of its anchor stones, it clung to the earth by means of its anchor stones, in other words, right? That's a very, very, you know, clear description of how the ark came to rest. And that place where it came to rest is called the village of Eight. The expression cling to the earth being the meaning of the town's first name, Arzap. Oh. So perhaps this is saying that what is being found on the goop, on the map that we're using, the modern map that we used, is not the same or not consistent or not accurate with what we have found by research, that Arzap is the name, the old name of the place called the Village of Eight, where the ark clung to the earth, because that's the meaning of the town's first name, the town of Arzap, right? So it must be near the anchor stones, since it's called by a name that means clung to the earth or cling to the earth. And eight refers to the eight survivors: Noah, three sons, and four wives, one for each of them. It is here that Mr. Ron Wyatt identified Noah's residence at the village of Eight, that is. There's a house there that many people actually, or certainly not just Mr. Ron Wyatt, believe is the former residence of the patriarch Noah. The place of first descent, the place of first descent of the ark, that is, the boat onto land, also called the Derupinar site, although the ark slid down the mountain before it arrived at the final resting place on the mountain, called the Derupinar site. The place of first descent would be above the Derupinar site on the mountain, and the Turkish army captain who identified it, having been named İlhan Derupinar, so it's named after him. The Derupinar site is near Uzengili, Turkey, and is the site of Misha or Naxçıvan, Mr. David Deal's find, which he calls Noah's long-lost city, discovered in 1997. The Ark, search for Ark of Noah on Wikimapia, it used to be found there by doing that search, was discovered in 1948, the Ark was, by Rashit Sarihan, the Kurdish shepherd, after an earthquake uncovered it in the surrounding earth. So he discovered it before the Derupinar discovery was made by the photograph taken in 1959. That's fascinating. He discovered it. Isn't that fascinating? He discovered it, this Kurdish shepherd, Rashit Sarihan, or Sarihan, in 1948, after an earthquake. And between 3281 and 1948, 3281 BCE and 1948 CE, The ark evidently slid a mile or 2 kilometers downhill from the place of first descent. During that period of about 5,000 years, sometime in that period, it slid down the mountain. The 1959 Durupinar photo was used to discover Misha in 1997 after David Fassold gave it to Mr. Deal about 1995, talking about the city of Misha, which is the city built closest to the place of first descent of the Ark. That's not the Anchorstone descent, that's the descent of the ship itself onto the mountain. And that site was called Misha, where the city was. And the city was discovered after David Fassold gave the Durupinar photo to Mr. Deal about 1995. Dr. Arthur Brandenberger, a photogrammetric expert, Dr. Arthur Brandenberger, who was also associated with identifying the missiles in the Cuban Missile Crisis, said of the boat-like shape in that photo. So he's a very famous expert on the study of photographs, on the interpretation of photographs. And he said, I have no doubt at all that this object is a ship. See, because many people have tried to maintain that it's not a ship, even after all the investigations have been done. But when he first saw the photo, he said he had no doubt at all that this object is a ship. In my entire career, he said, I've never seen an object like this on a stereo photo. Dr. Brandenberger with italics ours. The words in italics are, I have never seen an object like this. And 14 anchor stones were found between Kazan and Nakhchivan, or Misha, as it's also called. Nakhchivan is the same place as Misha. 14 anchor stones were found between Kazan and Nakhchivan in line with there being what better possible explanation. And that's the end of our study of the article, The Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express for today. It's chapter 12, paragraph 2. And we saw the map yesterday. It shows the place of 8 is also the same place as Kazan, or the town called Arzat, meaning clung to the earth, must also be clearly nearby, it seems like. But we've interpreted the former name of Kazan as Arzat in this article, on this map. But we have the Drogue stones there. We see that they're a certain distance from Dogu Bayazit, and that it's that the Drogue stones are northwest of Dogu Bayazit, and it's northwest of Uzengili, which is very near to the Ark's place of first descent on the map that we looked at yesterday. And Nakhchivan is, of course, right there at the place of first descent, because they would have settled that area right at the time when the Ark was still resting on the mountain. So they evidently, anyway, built houses and had a small town there on the mountain before the Ark slid down. We don't know exactly when the Ark slid down, but it was a mudslide or a volcanic eruption or something. And the Ark ended up quite a bit closer to Uzengili by about, well, I don't know, more than a mile closer, maybe? Yeah, that's what it said. We said it slid down the mountain 1 mile there in the paragraph today. It slid down about 1 mile from where it originally had descended. but the place of resting was at Kazan, where the arks, anchor stones, the drogue stones came to rest at the first instance, and that's it for that. We've got about 13 minutes remaining, or so. So what happened to me, my pulse rate right now, it was a little higher than it should be, and I didn't feel quite right, and so, I mean, I didn't have any energy. That was the main thing. And, well, I suffered from frequent urination, too, which is a symptom of calcium excess, or vitamin D excess with calcium. So I realized I've been drinking some of my own well water, unprocessed, or, you know, not distilled, but just straight from the well, and drinking a lot of milk, too. So those things, combined with how much vitamin D and calcium I was taking, which was something like 60,000 units of vitamin D and, you know, quite a lot of calcium in all the milk and the water, it was giving my heart rate, causing it to be elevated, because calcium causes the heart to beat. So if I measure my heart rate now, I'm trying to just cut out all the calcium and vitamin D for today, except for the minimum amount of vitamin D. I took about 7,000 units of vitamin D today, and that's all I'm going to take. But I'm not going to take calcium anymore. So if I drink just pure water, distilled water, and try to drink a fair bit of it and don't eat any calcium, my heartbeat should go down again. But, you know, and I should feel better also. I'm taking my heart rate now. Oh, it seems like it was only 66 right now. That's good. Try again. Times 6, 72. Yeah. Well, it seems like it's slowed down a tiny bit already. But I will, you know, it's very difficult to get rid of the vitamin D from your system. You can flush calcium out. The vitamin D has its own half-life and takes quite a long time if you really take a lot of it. So, but I know that 60,000 units of vitamin D is not very much. I know that. As long as you're not taking much calcium, 60,000 units of vitamin D is not much. And every day, it'll go down. What's the half-life of vitamin D in your body? I forget, 15 days or something, I think. Is that what we found? If I take 7,000 today, but I took 60,000 every day for the past week, the 7,000 won't do much except make sure that I have some in the body in the right places. But because I'll, you know, in one day, I'll lose, well, maybe 7,000 is a bit too much. I'll take less, but I'm taking a liquid vitamin K2 MK7 with the D in it, and I cut that in half today. But I should take probably even less until I get my heart rate completely under control again. Isn't that amazing? It's about 66, between 66 and 72 now, 68, 69 beats per minute. It's come down, definitely, because it was definitely at 78 beats and it wouldn't go down. So yeah, I'm already on the road to full recovery. But yeah, what is the half-life of vitamin D? I want to know. How much time have we got? 8 minutes, okay. Biological half-life, half-life, or vitamin D3, or just say vitamin D because there are different forms. Oh yeah, there's a form of vitamin D called 25-hydroxyvitamin D. Has a half-life of 15 days. It's the most abundant and stable form of vitamin D in the blood. Right. There's another one though called 1,25 hydroxy vitamin D. This is the active form of vitamin D. It has a half-life of about 15 hours. See that? So tomorrow I should be normal if that's what's doing it. The active form is what's doing it, which you'd think that would be the one. Because of its short half-life, it's not used to assess vitamin D status. Well, I don't believe in using the blood to assess anything, because the blood is not an indication of what the body is actually doing, or what nutrients are in the cells or in the interstitial fluid or anything like that. The blood is just an indication of what's being carried from one place to another in the body. It doesn't indicate the body's status at all. So, but of course, we're also told not to use blood in the Bible. When it says don't eat blood, they also say it's not to be used for anything either. It's to be thrown out on the ground. So the idea of not eating blood is to not use it in the Bible. That's the biblical understanding. The correct understanding of the Bible saying don't eat blood is don't use it for anything. Don't use it for anything, yeah. Don't use... Right. Oh, I know. Okay. Okay. Okay. Used for anything at all. Right. We need to find this now. Okay, we'll do a search. Do a Google search. We got time? Yeah, we have a little time. Where does the Bible say to throw blood on the ground? Right. Right. Okay. Let's see. Let's look up the eating of blood. Eat not blood. Eat not blood, right? Look that up. Leviticus 7 and 26. I know it's there. I've seen it before. What if we look for... Let's keep searching a little bit longer here. What if we look for the word blood and the word ground? I looked for that already. Yeah, it's something to do with not eating blood. Okay. Not to eat blood. Where does the Bible say not to eat blood, but to throw it on the ground? See, because the question comes up, you know, because it says throw it on the ground. There it is, Deuteronomy 15 and 23. Because we know it's there, because the question always comes up, well, can you use it for fertilizer if they say throw it on the ground? But no, that's not. The answer is no, you can't do that, because the idea is not to use it. And there it is, right there, Deuteronomy. We're going to find it here under Deuteronomy 15 and 23. The good thing about the Bible is everybody knows what it says. All the translations say the same thing. Only its blood you must not eat. Upon the earth you should pour it out as water. Right. Talking about animals, when you eat the animals, you're not even allowed to use the blood. It's not to be used. And when we saw the fat, is another example. Eat not fat. You must not eat, yeah, any fat or any blood at all, it says there. But you see, with fat, there's a difference, like they said, also with the fat. They were allowed, when I was a young child, I wouldn't eat fat. But it's fascinating because it says in the Bible not to eat fat. And my parents always wondered why I wouldn't eat fat. I didn't like fat, but I wouldn't eat it. Here it is. Leviticus 7 and 24 says, now the fat of a body already dead and the fat of an animal torn to pieces may be used for anything else conceivable, but you must not eat it at all. That's if it's already dead. Or if it's been used as an offering too. But you're not to eat blood and so on. And we saw that you have to throw it on the ground, meaning you don't use it at all. See, the idea is it's sacred and you don't use it. But also, there's no point in doing it for blood tests either, as there are many reasons why it doesn't work. January 13th, 2025 of the Common Era. The time is 18:40 hours, Canadian Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green. That concludes our video for today. I love you very much and thank you so much for listening and watching once again. In my behalf, this is Sissy. This is Star. And I almost forgot. Yeah, there's Cassie still here telling us 18:41 hours. Exactly right at the moment. And that's my digital watch, but 18:41, that's it for today. But we studied the Ark of Urartu, Chapter 12. Paragraph 2, it's called The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express, an article from 2011, written by yours truly, and that was the second paragraph.